Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for joining us. We have packed a lot into today's show, so I'm glad you're with us. 6 weeks from today, on July 1st, Sonia Santelices will take over as superintendent of Baltimore City Public Schools. The school board and now former CEO Gregory Thornton decided to part ways just 2 years into a four-year contract. The board began a search for his replacement at the start of this calendar year, and when rumors of Thornton's departure surfaced in February, denied them. Later this hour, we will speak to the chairman Marnell Cooper about what the board was looking for in Dr. Thornton's replacement, and we'll hear from Dr. Santelices about her goals and the experience she brings. Up first, what impact does a school superintendent have on student achievement? We hear some superintendents praised as superstars and rock stars credited with boosting standardized test scores and graduation rates. On the flip side, others carry the blame for not-so-hot scores and even a district's financial problems. Is this fair? The Center on Children and Families at the Brookings Institution in Washington has looked at just that question, what impact school superintendents have on student achievement, and produced a report 2 years ago titled, School Superintendents, Vital or Irrelevant? Joining us by phone is Russ Whitehurst, Senior Fellow in Economic Studies at the Center, who worked on that analysis. Russ Whitehurst, welcome to Midday.
I'm pleased to be with you.
I'm very pleased to have you. I also want to introduce former Baltimore School Board member David Stone. He has served two stints on the school board, terms that spanned the careers of five school CEOs. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you.
I'm very glad that you are with us. Russ Whitehurst, your study looked at superintendents and districts in North Carolina and Florida. And first of all, what did you observe about the tenure, how long school superintendents served?
It's a short-term job with a lot of churn. We found that the typical superintendent had been on the job for 3 to 4 years, and that lines up with other data collections that have looked at that question. So it is a short-term job.
Yeah, I saw that the Council of Chief State School Officers and the Council of the Great City Schools have looked at the tenure question, and they found not only is it short, but it has dropped. One of those groups found that it used to be around 6 years in 2008, and by 2012 it was down to 3 years. David Stone, I'd like to get your sense of why that would be. Why are school superintendents serving even shorter terms?
Well, what I was able to observe during my time on the board is that more and more superintendents or CEOs are being asked to do things that are not really part of the work of a school system. So that
what would you identify as one of those tasks?
Let's say, you know, finding ways to get food for families, roofs over people's houses, mental health services, social services. All those things are now part of what a superintendent has to do, and it becomes a job that's unmanageable without the help of other folks in the community, including those folks in political positions like mayor.
Russ Whitehurst, specifically, the focus of your study on student achievement, what kind of connection did you find between school superintendents and the achievement of the kids in their district?
The association is passingly small. So of all the things that a parent or a community might be interested in terms of student achievement, the superintendent is the least of those things. The teacher is very important. The classroom's important. The school's important. Even the district's important. But we didn't find that superintendents had any reliable impact on student achievement, and that was a surprise to us.
And were you able to look at—and I realize your specialty is economics. You're a senior fellow in economic studies, and so I'm assuming that you focus on data a lot. I mean, can you speak to any particular qualities of school superintendents that seem to make any difference?
Well, since we found overall that superintendents did not make a reliable difference, then I can't describe the qualities that accounted for
okay.
the differences. I will say it's a very complex job, and we focused only on student achievement. So you've got, as was just alluded to, the complexities of the job, the many tasks that superintendents are asked to perform. But people think, and I think school boards think, when they're hiring a new superintendent, they're hiring somebody who's going to make transformational change, and students are going to learn a lot more. And in fact, we did not find that to be the case.
And indeed, you just said a minute ago, the superintendent seemed to be the least important factor if you measured
right.
against student achievement on tests.
Yes.
The most
important factor is the classroom and the teacher. There are vast differences there, but the superintendents come and go, and district achievement just doesn't change much as a function of that.
That is Russ Whitehurst, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution's Center on Children and Families. We're discussing a study that the center produced about the tenure of school superintendents and what kind of impact, if any, it has on student achievement. This is Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Kasten. Here with me in the studio is former Baltimore School Board member David Stone. One thing that confused me about your study, Russ Whitehurst, is that there was a separate category you described of impact greater than you saw superintendents having, an impact of districts. And I'm confused
yep.
about how if a superintendent is leading a district, if you identify an impact that a district might have on the achievement of students, isn't that essentially a credit that should be given the superintendent?
You would think so, but that's not what we found. So the superintendents come and go in districts that maintain above average or below average performance. We think what's likely to be happening is that districts that are moving towards reform and improving their schools tend to attract superintendents who go in the same direction. And so a superintendent leaves and is replaced with another superintendent that fits the values of the community and the school board. So really it's more of a community, district, school board issue than it is the particular person who's at the helm of the district. It is, if you will, as you know, some airlines probably have better pilots than other airlines, and they continue to attract good pilots. And I fly a lot. I don't know the name of my pilot when I'm flying, and luckily, I don't have to care. So they are interchangeable in that sense, and it looks like that's the case for districts as well.
Well, after going through this analysis, Russ Whitehurst, what kind of implications does this have for school systems going through a search for a new CEO or superintendent? I mean, does it just not make any difference, or is there a way to try to find a leader who might make a difference?
I think that's an excellent question, and I'm just speculating on what the correct answer is, but my speculations arise from the analysis we did, where we find, again, that teachers are extraordinarily important. So if I were on a school board or on a search committee looking for a new superintendent, I'd want to try to find somebody who, both in terms of the story he or she tells as well as past experience, has found ways to attract and retain stronger teachers in a district, because we know that will make a difference. And that's both how you go about it technically. It's also the politics of it all. You can't get anything done if everybody's mad at you. But a focus on the things that we know that matter, teachers, curricula, particular schools, would be something I'd want a new superintendent to have experience with and to have excelled at.
David Stone, let me ask you, as someone who spent how long on the Board of School Commissioners in Baltimore?
Maybe 10 years.
About. 10 years. You were not involved in this most recent search for
no.
a new CEO. But what's your reaction to this discussion of the Russ Whitehurst's conclusion that the important thing to focus on is teachers? And it really, that's much more important than focusing on who is the superintendent.
Well, that may be true for the area that was highlighted in the study for academic achievement. But there are also other roles that a CEO plays that are very important. Morale, for example, is hugely important, and that plays into the retention of teachers. In a district like Baltimore City, it might be more interesting to study whether chief academic officers have an impact on achievement than the superintendent, because they're much more closely tied to what happens in the classroom, right down to which principals are hired and so on. But a good superintendent, I know some things that we look for, is somebody who can be a cheerleader for the school system, somebody who can, for example, let's take Dr. Alonzo and the 21st century facilities. Now, a different superintendent might not have been able to have gotten that accomplished.
Working out the deal with the state government for financing renovation of so many schools.
Right. That had a lot of moving parts to it, and it really took someone like Dr. Alonzo to help ensure that that made its way all the way through and was passed. And that includes the people he hired to work with him, including Dr. Santelices. I mean, all of that speaks to the confidence of the public in the school system. And by public, I also mean anyone outside of the actual school system, including politicians. And so that's where I think a superintendent really plays an important role. Achievement, maybe in a smaller district, it's more of an impact. I didn't really see anything specific about district size, although there was some mention about urban school systems in the article. But I know in Baltimore City that the superintendent is not as closely tied to academic achievement than perhaps in a smaller.
Russ Whitehurst, what's your response to that about other kinds of leadership?
I think Mr. Stone and I are really saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that crunching numbers, we didn't find that superintendents were having much of an effect on achievement. And he's saying, based on his experience in Baltimore, that's not what the superintendent is hired to do, and it's probably somebody else and other people in the district who are having that effect. So again, it's a complicated job. I think the general public tends to think of it as a job that's about dramatic improvements in student achievement, and again, it turns out not to be. And so I think we're on the same page, that we're coming at that page from different directions.
One last thing I wanted to mention, Andres Alonzo, the Baltimore school CEO, whom you just mentioned, David Stone, who got a lot of, I think it's generally agreed, got a lot accomplished, was in the job 6 years. And Russ Whitehurst, you looked, again, I know you were looking specifically at student achievement, but is there any argument that superintendents who are in the job longer are more effective at all the skills of being superintendent?
Again, we just looked at student achievement. We found that longevity was not associated with rising student achievement. So having a superintendent on the job for 8 years did not produce rising student achievement compared to serving 2 or 3 years. I have little doubt, though, that it makes a difference in other things. You mentioned Dr. Alonzo and the and facilities. So there are a variety of things that simply take a while to get accomplished. And usually longevity is associated with a good relationship with the community, a board, other supports for schools. And so it is a foundation in which things can be done. But again, we look just at student achievement and didn't find that it made any difference there.
I really appreciate your walking us through your study. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Russ Whitehurst is Senior Fellow in Economic Studies at the Brookings Institution. The study which he contributed to is called School Superintendents, Vital or Irrelevant. We need to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to look at how Baltimore selects its school superintendents. Former school board member David Stone will stick with us. We'll also hear from the chair of the board, lawyer Marnell Cooper. Later in the hour, we will speak with the new CEO, Sonia Santelices. You can join our conversation. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email, midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. Early this month, the Baltimore City School Board revealed not only that school CEO Gregory Thornton would be stepping down, but that a replacement already had been selected. Former Chief Academic Officer Sonia Santelises, who served from 2010 to 2013 under then-CEO Andres Alonso. Joining us by phone is the lawyer who oversaw that selection process, Marnell Cooper, chair of the Baltimore City Board of School Commissioners. He was appointed to the board in 2012. He became chair in July 2015 after Shanaysha Sauls stepped down from the board to run a local charter school. Marnell Cooper, welcome to Midday.
Good afternoon, Ms. Cass. I appreciate it.
I'm glad you could be with us. And former Baltimore School Board member David Stone is still with us here in Studio A. David Stone had left the board before the most recent superintendent search, but he was part of the board that hired Gregory Thornton. Stone's two stints on the board span the tenures of five school CEOs in Baltimore. Let me ask you both, how soon after Gregory Thornton took the job in the summer of 2014 did the board conclude that it wasn't working out? Marnell Cooper?
Well, as I've discussed in the press, the board began to have discussions with Dr. Thornton in December of 2015. You know, one of the responsibilities of the school board is to ensure that there's confidence in the school system. And what was occurring, based upon some of the media reports, which I'm sure you're aware of, along with some of the public testimony we received, as well as just folks, you know, approaching us in our everyday life, there was this discussions around people beginning to have a lack of confidence in the district. So when the board set out and started having discussions with Dr. Thornton, we began to discuss if there needed to be a change, how could we do that, how could we transition in a way that was respectful to everyone involved and make it a smooth process that wasn't distracting to the teachers and the students and the families of the district. In our search, we began to look at, one, how can we find someone who has credibility in academics? How do we find someone that has some political capital, as well as someone who could lead this district with the right supports for the next 10 years? And we believe we found that in Dr. Santelises, and that's why we reached out and we hired her.
I guess, a lot of us who don't have to make the kinds of big decisions that affect so many people that the school board is making, I think maybe some of us thought, well, how confident were you going into the search for his replacement when your search for that led to Dr. Thornton so soon was clear had not worked out? David Stone, let me throw that to you. I mean, was it? Well, that's right. No, I won't throw that to you because you were not involved in this latest search. So, Marnell Cooper, I mean, did you have any qualms about whether you could make a better choice this time?
The questions that have been raised about why we were so confidential about this lead directly to the question you just asked. There is an assumption that somehow we knew what was going to happen, and we did not. That's why we had ongoing discussions with the previous CEO, and that's why we began to do a search process, because we had to see who was actually interested in leading our district. And we were fortunate that there were folks from around the country who did express interest, very highly qualified individuals. And the process revealed that Dr. Santelises, with her experience not only here in the district, but also her experience over the past 3 years in focusing on closing the achievement gap in urban school districts, which, as we all know, is one of the challenges we have here in Baltimore. And I think it's very important, your listeners, you know, understand this, is that our number one job is to improve outcomes for kids. And we as a board have to figure out how to do that. And part of figuring that out is having the CEO that can lead the operations of the district, that can lead us to better outcomes. I was listening to your previous guest speak about CEOs and maybe their lack of impact on student achievement, but he did say something which I think a CEO is very important to, and that is the attracting and retaining of teachers, of high-quality teachers. I think a CEO plays a major part in attracting teachers and as well as principals to the district, as well as retaining those that are highly qualified. And I think that Dr. Santelises' track record in the various positions which she's held demonstrate that she has capacity to do that.
I appreciate your raising the idea of transparency, because that certainly is something that I wanted to ask you about. When there had been a lot of sort of low-level talk behind the scenes that Dr. Thornton needed to be replaced and that the board was looking into that, you quite explicitly said, Marnell Cooper, at least you were quoted in the Baltimore Sun saying, that Dr. Thornton received a positive evaluation after his first year with the district, and we expect that he will fulfill the remainder of his contract. I believe that was in February. Turns out neither part of that was true. So how does that fit into your goal of having worried about losing the confidence of the public?
Well, one, he actually did receive a positive evaluation. The evaluation has some things in it that were not positive, but I think his overall evaluation was determined to be positive. Second, with respect to my comments in February, we did not actually enter the search until February. And as your earlier question touched on, not knowing where this was going to go, our position was, until we have a new CEO or we select a new CEO, Dr. Thornton is the CEO of the district, or he was at the time. And once it was determined that we could negotiate and agree with him and amend his contract, once we did that, then we moved forward. Once these decisions were made, we came forward to the public and explained them and sort of represented what occurred during the process. But it happened very quickly.
That is Marnell Cooper, the chair of the Baltimore City Board of School Commissioners, here on Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Here with me in the studio is former school board member David Stone, and we're talking about the process of selecting a new CEO for the Baltimore Public Schools. Well, there's another piece to it, which the Baltimore Sun has reported on, which is the way you financed the search by essentially skirting the requirement that expenditures greater than $25,000 be public. And when you were asked about it, you said, well, yeah, it's supposed to be, but we wanted this to be confidential, which the Sun editorialized was kind of and justifies the means description of following the rules. Doesn't that undercut the credibility of the board?
I say, as your listeners are well aware, boards have policies that allow them to either waive those policies or suspend those policies. Anyone who reviews the policies of the board will find the policies that exist that allowed us to do what we were able to do. The issue of whether undercutting the district and whether the ends justify the means, our responsibility is to improve academic achievement and improve the outcomes for kids. This board takes it very seriously. We do not treat the CEO position as a political football that we toss around to make ourselves seem relevant. We take the job of improving academic achievement very seriously, which is why we passed a strategic plan, and in the most recent budget that we passed, we have focused on trying to get grade level reading by third grade, as well as focusing on algebra in the middle grades. And these are areas that I think Dr. Sandalise, in her previous experience, one in New York, being the executive director, I believe, of the Algebra Project, as well as work that she did here in the district in developing the curriculum here in the district, that she is able to lead us and be able to improve upon those areas which we think are necessary, because they are all key indicators of not only success for kids in school, but also success for kids in life.
We just got an email from Mary, Mary in Baltimore, who wrote us, I cannot overestimate how disappointed I am that this search was done in secret. How do you expect support if you lack transparency? Even if this new superintendent seems so good, she starts at a real disadvantage. David Stone, I know you have some thoughts about the search process, even though you weren't part of it.
You know, just to go through a typical search process, at least the ones that I've been involved with, and I don't recall ever being involved with one where a superintendent left during their tenure, but or CEO. The part first thing you do is you get you announce that you're having a search firm, let's say, in typical times, and then you that you're doing a search and you hire a search firm, and then they go out and canvass the community and they set up community meetings and they find out characteristics and qualities as well as priorities for the public. Well, you know, it's arguable that in this case all that information already existed. So certainly you can say that the school board knew what the public wanted already. You know, I could say that. The rest of it is never done in public. I mean, it's always done quietly to protect people's professional lives. And in this case, I don't see where that particular piece was any different. So the only part for me that was missing was an announcement that there was going to be a search. And I think Commissioner Cooper explained why the school board felt that they ought to do that. I would also like to add that in my time on the school board, there has been no board chair that has been more committed to transparency than Commissioner Cooper. He's the first one to have our subcommittee meetings on television so that the public can see, because that's where a lot of the work gets done. So, you know, I was not in the room, and I don't know what were the reasons that were going on there, but I'm sure that they talked this out plenty, knowing the way that that particular group of folks work. Transparency is very important to them.
Marnell Cooper, how would you respond then to Mary, who wrote us how disappointed she is that the fact of a search was not transparent?
Oh, what I would say to Mary is I hope that she doesn't continue to be disappointed. And the reason I say that is because we are trying to help the students and the children of the city. When I hear students at Frederick Douglass have a meeting 1 year after the disruption that occurred last year, and they say how folks who said they were going to be there abandoned them and have not returned. We as a board understand that, you know, it is our number one job. The job is placed on us to improve their outcomes. And in making these decisions, whether the process, as Dr. Stone has explained, is generally done in private because it's a personnel matter, and whether just not having an announcement seems to be sort of the consternation, we have to help these kids continue to grow, and we have to improve their outcomes and not abandon them. And the board made a decision that we believe demonstrates to this community that we are very serious and very committed to improving the outcomes for children in this district.
James has called us from Baltimore. James, welcome to Midday.
Good afternoon, Sheila and Dr. Stone. This is Mr. Williams.
How are you, sir?
I've been advocating for the last five CEOs as well, and I'm very frank about the board's inability to gain the trust of the public, because, some lies have been told and things have been hidden. That's the way we feel in the advocate community, by the board. The CEO is somebody who we can hold accountable because we pay them. The CEO is paid. The board is not paid. So advocates and transparency go together. And as advocates, we don't see transparency. And, Mr. Cooper, whatever you're saying, it means absolutely nothing to us as advocates, because we fight to get the truth to be told to us when we attend board meetings, and we expect to have some transparency in the decision-making process, which the board does, unfortunately, not to the standards of most citizens. So we have no trust in the board because they're not elected. They're just appointed by whoever. And we're really disgusted with the school board, period. That's all I have to say.
I appreciate your calling, James. David Stone, let me ask you to react, and then I'll ask Marnell Cooper, too.
Well, I don't know really how to respond to that. I know that during my time on the school board, there's no sinister plot going on or anything like that. Most of us are parents of students in the school system, spouses work in the school system, or we've been everyone there. It's not this big star chamber where folks are trying to figure things out. The school board takes very seriously what the public says and changes decisions based on what the public says, contrary to what a lot of folks think. Certainly, as our caller no doubt remembers, it was his speaking to the school board that got all of us working on making sure that our schools were drinking water was lead free. So to say that the school board is not responsive, or to say that the school board and the community can't work together out of trust, it just, I'm surprised to hear that, because here we have a perfect example of how it happened.
James also told our producer that he's upset that right now the school system is paying both severance to Dr. Thornton and will be paying a salary to Dr. Santelisa, so there's a double expense for the school board. And Marnell Cooper, I'll ask you to respond to James also, but I want us first to hear from Lorenzo, who's called us from Baltimore. Lorenzo, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm calling. My wife is a teacher in the Baltimore City School District, and my daughter is also a student in the Baltimore City School District. So I'm calling basically in that capacity. Also, I'm a African-American male who is extremely concerned about young black children's education. So, and I want to basically kind of commend Commissioner Cooper. I've never heard you speak before. I want to commend you on continuously bringing this conversation back to what all this is really about, and that is the achievement of the children. I can sympathize with you trying to make a big decision with switching CEOs, doing it, you know, doing such a thing in the public, and out of a confidential type of situation, because you're going to get all these adults putting their two cents in about what they think should be done and shouldn't be done, which is the way it's supposed to be. Don't get me wrong, but unfortunately, you never know where their allegiances lie. The first part of the conversation, I got to tell you, I was getting pretty heated when I heard the two gentlemen, the ex commissioner, I think I can't remember what the other gentleman did, but listening to them talk about how the CEO or the superintendent is merely just an administrative figure. That's what I kind of took from it, and I'm like, are you kidding? I mean, I was getting heated listening to that, because while that is partly fact, as Commissioner Cooper says, all of this, the school district, everyone's energies, anything anyone does, is supposed to be about the children. And that's basically all I have to say.
Lorenzo, thank you for calling. Let me just make it clear that a former board member, David Stone, was on the opposite side of that analysis about superintendents. But Marnell Cooper, I'll ask you to respond both to James, who says he doesn't trust the school board, and to Lorenzo, who commends you.
Well, to James, who was speaking about the advocates, I think Dr. Stone just raised an example where the advocates and the school board have worked together. And I will also raise another one where we have been working around the school police issue, which everyone knows became an issue last year. And we have been working extensively with advocates about what our new policy is going to look like. I mean, we're spending a lot of time, and I think the advocates have been welcoming. And I think that the district has been welcoming, and I think we're going to have a policy that everyone can, well, we may not agree on every aspect of it, but I think that we can agree that it's a policy that is jointly made by advocates as well as the school board. So advocates and the school board have been working together. With respect to Lorenzo, I appreciate his comments. I think he is hitting the point which we as a district are trying to drive home. We know that a CEO has a lot of other issues to address. We know that here in Baltimore City, with respect to the 21st Century Plan, that is a buildings project, and yes, that's something that the CEO is responsible for. But at the same time, the CEO is the face of the district, and what the CEO says, how the CEO says it, how the CEO treats people, how the CEO engages with the community has a tremendous impact on who desires to work in this city. The job is not an easy job teaching in Baltimore City. However, we have pay that is commensurate or better than most of the jurisdictions around us, and we believe that we can improve the outcomes of children. The challenge we have, and the challenge that Dr. Santelisa is going to have, is if I use a runner's analogy, we're doing a 12-minute mile, and we need to begin to do a 10-minute mile and then get to an 8-minute mile because we have so much ground to cover. But I think that we can do it if the faith-based community, the advocates, mayor, city council, philanthropic community, the business community understand that the school system, as well as the school system, understands that we're not an island. We do not exist on an island unto ourselves all alone. We are a part of the community, and we need to work with the community as best we can, all the constituencies, to help Dr. Santelisa be successful at this job.
Marnell Cooper, I want to thank you for joining us for this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
And David Stone, it's been great to have you. I appreciate your coming in.
Thank you.
We're going to take a real quick break here. When we come back, Dr. Sonia Santelises, the next CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools, will join us. What is her vision for Baltimore schools? I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. Sonia Santelises will formally take the reins of the Baltimore City Public Schools 6 weeks from today, but has said that she will then begin her appointment as chief of the Baltimore City Schools. Dr. Santelises began her career in education working with Teach for America in New York. Later, she moved to Boston, where she served as acting deputy superintendent for teaching and learning and assistant superintendent for professional development. She then oversaw Boston's 25 pilot schools established to improve the academic performance of low-income students and students of color. Andres Alonso recruited Santelises to Baltimore in 2010 to be chief academic officer. She served until 2013, then headed to a nonprofit think tank, the Education Trust, as its vice president of K-12 policy and practice. Dr. Santelises holds a Bachelor of Arts degree from Brown University, a Master of Arts in Education Administration from Columbia University, and a Doctor of Education in Administration, Planning, and Social Policy from Harvard. Sonia Santelises, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. Let me tell listeners you can join this conversation by calling us at 410-662-8780 or sending us an email to midday@wypr.org. Dr. Santelises, in a nutshell, how would you describe your top goal as you take on this job?
So the top goal as I take on this job is to lead a school system that serves the community of Baltimore well by educating the next generation of Baltimore's leaders in our young people.
What do you think the biggest challenges are going to be?
So I think that the biggest challenges are going to be aligning the work of the system throughout all levels. Oftentimes, we know that the reality of what schools are facing is sometimes disconnected from the way that central supports and those of us who are not in the schools every day go about our work. So we need alignment, and that can be challenging in a large urban school system. I think the other challenge is restoring and reinvigorating our relationships with families and community, restoring the confidence in the system's ability to make adjustments, change, and respond to and partner with our community. And we have a ways to go in communicating how we do that. And then we just have the challenge of the interface of politics and resources that are often brought to bear, not in the most positive ways, on education, and that's just a reality. I will say the most encouraging part of at least my pre-days, before I start, is I think the real genuine goodwill from a number of sectors to really come together to work on behalf of Baltimore's young people.
How are you getting ready over the next 6 weeks?
That's a great question. So some of that is just getting lots of sleep, since I know I won't.
Good for you.
July comes around. But really a lot of time trying to organize listening, the most effective ways to listening. So I've already started just driving and visiting neighborhoods in Baltimore, and that will continue. I think listening to a variety of stakeholders, everyone from our philanthropic community, elected officials, who again have been very open to meet both at the state level as well as our local city officials, and then spending time, frankly, listening to students, teachers, and families. And that clearly we have those last three groups are large groups, so we'll have to organize ways to do that. And inviting folks at large to just provide feedback on what they see as the most pressing issues that the school system needs to adjust, how they are experiencing, how young people are experiencing school right now. And then from there, within the first 90 days or so of listening, to really early this fall be able to articulate what the district priorities for the work will be in moving the system and in moving our schools and young people forward.
So I realize you intended to take in a lot of suggestions, but at this point, what concrete idea do you have about how to, as you said, restore relations with community and families? Is there a specific that you have in mind?
So, well, I think some of that and what I've learned over numbers of years of working with communities is that while I might have ideas, I think some of the best ideas are closest to the community. I think we need to connect. So one of my intents, very concretely, is to really review how we can work most effectively, where we have successes, where we have gaps in terms of aligning city resources, so across departments, so partnering. And a great example of that is early in July, in my early days in July, I have a meeting scheduled with Dr. Wen, who heads up the city's health department. And part of my reason and prioritization for meeting with her, as well as other city offices, is to be able to ascertain, look for those places where we can leverage resources across different divisions to really support families and communities well. And I think that that's a real tangible that I hear both from schools as well as families, is that, when we work in our own separate boxes and don't coordinate, it actually makes it harder for the people that we all want to serve. So that's one tangible. I think the second tangible really is taking a look at what kinds of support and preparation do our school leaders have in engaging the community and families. We have school leaders in this city who have excellent communication and excellent engagement with their communities, with their families, and we have others who need more support in that area. And I think as a school system, we need to take responsibility for ensuring that our school leaders, that our teacher leaders are fully equipped with the best ways of engaging families. Because the reality is that most communities, most families engage with the school systems most often through their local schools. They're not looking at what we're necessarily doing at North Avenue first. They're looking through the lens of their young person's experience every day in schools. And so that needs to be a focal point of how we seek to hear and how we seek to adapt some of our practice to be more responsive.
Let's take Casey's question. Casey is calling us from Baltimore. Casey, welcome to Midday.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, Dr. Sandalisa, we actually met probably about 4 or 5 years ago. We sat on a panel together. I'm the owner of Dark to the Blue Cafe. And one of the things that I was extremely impressed about is that you are really involved in communities. And I think that you should have gotten the job years ago, and I'm glad that we did bring you back. But I'd also like this. One question is, what are your plans for charter schools? And two, owning a restaurant and being a part of the main streets here in Baltimore City, we have in our organization, we have tons of restaurants throughout the city. If there's anything that we can do to help make this more successful and to help it make a great transition for you, please just feel free to give me a call.
Casey, thank you for the call. Dr. Santelices?
No, and Casey, I also want to thank you for your call and particularly extending the offer for our small business owners, particularly our restaurateurs, to join us in this effort. And I actually want to think about that a little bit, because I think it's a great offer, and I don't want to just come off with something off the top of my head, but believe me, I will circle back on that one. So thank you for that offer. And I do think, to your first question, though, about charters, very straightforwardly, I still need a full briefing on where we are with charters, but I will say this, that one, I view schools in Baltimore City, whether they are charter, whether they are traditional, and whatever other label we want to give schools, these are all of our schools. These are all of our kids. We don't have charter kids. We don't have traditional kids. We have the young people of Baltimore City. And I think some of what needs to be brought to the discussion is a refocus on that. And I think earlier in the discussion about the role of school district leaders, CEOs and superintendents, there was a lot of discussion around how we communicate about the system. And one of the first things I want to do is to be able to open up the channels to communicate. There are clearly things that are rubs, and we're going to have to work through. But I do believe that if we can enter that conversation with that frame, and it has appeared to me as if the frame of all schools as Baltimore City Public Schools has taken a beating most recently. And I think we need to reestablish the charters in traditional schools. Together are the system. Two, I think we need to acknowledge that there has been a longstanding commitment to ensuring that families in Baltimore City have choice. And a number of our charter schools represent that choice, and that is important. But we also have excellent traditional schools that families are choosing. And so when I look across the overall task of educating all of Baltimore City's young people, we cannot afford to just exclude whole bands of schools. On the same note, though, I will say we need to do so in a fiscally responsible manner. We need to do it in a way that there is equity. And by equity, I don't mean everything looks exactly the same. By equity, I mean that wherever a young person goes, they can be guaranteed of a full and well-rounded education. And if we're to do that, we have to roll up our sleeves, and we have to look deeply at where are the areas where we agree. We need to plow through some that we don't. And I will be getting a deeper briefing on that in the coming weeks before July 1. But I think that I'm coming in with goodwill. I'm coming in with experience in both sectors. And so I haven't labeled either districts, you know, traditional schools or charter schools as villains in this, but I do think that we need to assess where we are and realize that we have two goals, and those goals are, again, to provide high-quality choice and to do it in a way that is equitable and fiscally responsible for the long-term success of all schools in Baltimore.
Dr. Santelises, we are flat out of time. I want to thank you for spending some time with us today, and wish you well as you start this. And I hope we'll be able to talk to you often on midday.
No, I'm sure it might be in a car or coming out of a store, but that's fine.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sonia Santelises will begin her tenure as CEO of Baltimore City Schools on July 1st. Earlier, we spoke with the Board of School Commissioners Chair Marnell Cooper, former board member David Stone, and Russ Whitehurst of the Brookings Institution. I want to thank them all. And thank Joe Squared for providing lunch today. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. And thank you for listening. Tune in Monday. We're going to continue talking about education. We're going to hear from retirees working to improve literacy at elementary schools across the city as part of the Baltimore Experience Corps. We'll also discuss the verdict in one of the police trials stemming from Freddie Gray's death last year. I'm Sheila Kast. Have a great weekend.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.